Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Away we go, episode 220 of the Al Galdi podcast. It is Monday, January 3rd, 2022. Hey, happy new year. I hope you had a nice New Year's Eve with whatever it was that you did. We never judge on this podcast. That's okay. We are accepting of all kinds in terms of behavior. So whether you stayed up until 5 a.m. doing God knows what, or you were in bed by 9 p.m., either way, I hope you had a good time on New Year's Eve. I spent my New Year's Eve day in a car driving back from my in-laws in Buford, South Carolina. Very nice town. We always have a nice time down there. I did the podcast from Buford all of last week, but the drive to and from Buford from the Washington, D.C. area, shall we say, is not quick. 8 hours, if you make great time, which we did going down there on Christmas Day, but driving back on New Year's Eve Day, we of course hit traffic, of course in Virginia. So the drive back took 9+ hours, and I'm not exaggerating with what I'm about to say here, our 16-month-old daughter cried slash screamed for at least 8 of the 9+ hours. It was unreal. I know that many of you have dealt with this kind of thing, but if you haven't, trust me, you haven't lived until you're in a car with a 16-month-old crying slash screaming for, again, at least 8 hours of a 9+ hour drive. She did not want to be in her booster seat. She now cannot stand being strapped into that thing or strapped into her high chair in the kitchen. Okay. She does not want to be strapped in, and nothing, and I mean nothing, will shut her up. Okay. We tried everything to shut her up. Bottle, no. Food, no. Playing with her, no. Talking to her, no. And I have to say this, okay? This is the first time I'm admitting this. I haven't said this to anybody just yet. In hour 4, or maybe 5, or maybe it was 6, I don't know, I lost track of the crying slash screaming, I actually found myself gaining a newfound respect for her. Maybe it was Stockholm Syndrome, but then again, maybe not. Because what happened is, I couldn't help but admire the tenacity, the relentlessness, the dogged determination. You know, like I said, she did not want to be strapped in. She didn't care what anyone else thought, said, or did. And she was going to let you know about her dissatisfaction until someone did something to fix the problem. And I have to say, I came to respect that. And I bring all of this up on this Monday installment of the Al Galdi podcast, because maybe, just maybe, this is what we as Washington football team fans need to do. Maybe we all need to find our version of crying and screaming as loud as possible for as long as possible, or at least until things truly change for our team for the better. Because one thing that we do know right now, things ain't changed for the better all that much yet. We have ourselves another playoffless season for the team currently known as the Washington football team, although the team will not be known as the Washington football team for much longer. The new name is coming, maybe sooner than we think, but Washington's 2021 season is ending sooner than we wanted. A 2016 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles at FedEx Field on Sunday afternoon. Washington now 6-10 this season and done when it comes to contending for the postseason. A railing on the side of the tunnel leading to the visiting team's locker room at FedEx Field collapsed after this Washington loss to Philadelphia at FedEx Field on Sunday afternoon. Did you see this? The collapse of the railing. How appropriate is this? Okay? Like, how fitting is this? The railing collapsed, causing several fans to fall and hit the ground as Eagles quarterback Jalen Hurts was walking down the tunnel. Now, none of the fans appeared to be hurt or need treatment at the scene, but this could have been a very gruesome and ugly scene. Thankfully, was not. Now, a Washington football team official per ESPN said that the area was for disabled people, had no seats, and was designed for wheelchair access. According to the team official, a number of Eagles fans crowded onto the platform as players walked off the field. So clearly what the team is saying is those rowdy, rambunctious Eagles fans are to blame for the collapse of that railing. And sure enough, there were many, many, many Eagles fans at FedEx Field on Sunday, as we knew that there would be. But, you know, I was thinking about the collapse of the railing, right? And this happening in Washington's final game at FedEx Field in another very disappointing season for the team we currently refer to as the Washington football team. So the final score of Sunday's game was 2016. The final score of Washington's first game of the 2021 regular season, another game at FedEx Field, was 2016. That was that loss to the Los Angeles Chargers all the way back in week one. And do you remember what happened in that game at FedEx Field beyond just the football? It was during that game that a pipe connected to rainwater storage broke and drenched a small section of fans at FedEx Field. Again, how appropriate is all of this? Another oh-so-disappointing Washington season begins with a loss at FedEx Field during which a pipe ends up dousing fans with rainwater, okay? And then the final game at FedEx Field for the season ends with a railing collapsing and fans falling onto the field. Never mind that those fans were Eagles fans. I just find this like so appropriate. FedEx Field is such a dump, okay? I mean, FedEx Field cannot be destroyed soon enough. Although who the heck knows if that's going to ever happen. It may be that Washington remains at FedEx Field for decades to come, the way this search for a new Washington football team stadium is going. Anyway, we have a lot to get into, people. Next segment, the front five. My five biggest takeaways off Washington's loss to the Eagles at FedEx Field. I will then have plenty more for you off the game beyond those thoughts and the front five. You will be hearing during this show the best of Ron Rivera's postgame press conference from Sunday, as I will be hitting on a number of topics. The big picture with Washington, Taylor Heinicke, the offensive line, Scott Turner, Washington's defense. There were positives I'll be getting into, like John Bates and Jarrett Patterson and Joey Sly. I will bring up Curtis Samuel not playing again. Terry McLaurin, finally. He was targeted more than two times in the game. That was nice to see. And so much more that we'll be getting into off Washington's loss to Philadelphia. Also on the show, the rest of your DC Sports Weekend. We'll talk about our NHL leading Capitals. Yes, ain't no team in the NHL better than our team so far this NHL season. The Capitals, two games for the Caps over the weekend, a 3-1 win at the Detroit Red Wings on Friday night, during which Alex Ovechkin became the NHL's all-time leader in regular season power play goals. The Great Eight making history again in his unbelievable career. We then had a 4-3 overtime loss to the New Jersey Devils at Capital One Arena on Sunday. I will talk Wizards, a gut punch of a loss for the Wiz on Saturday night, a 120-119 loss to the Eastern Conference leading Chicago Bulls on a DeMar DeRozan three as time expired in the fourth quarter. What a game that was. I'll also talk some college basketball, including a good win for Virginia on Saturday evening, 74-69 at Syracuse. We have a lot to discuss on this, the first installment of the Al Galdi podcast in the year 2022. A reminder to you in this new year of 2022, if you're listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, please give this podcast a 5-star rating. If you haven't yet done that, you can now rate podcasts on Spotify. So for those who use Spotify, be aware of that. So 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you're using Apple Podcasts, please write a brief 1 or 2 sentence review saying how much you like the podcast if you haven't yet done that. I don't mean to put extra work on your plate. You're probably saying, geez, Galdi, the last thing I need is more stuff that I have to do. I hear you, okay? I hear you. But these ratings and reviews help to make the podcast successful. I know that they can seem a little silly, but trust me, these things are important, and I very much appreciate you doing these things. I mean that. You can tweet me at Al Galdi. You can email me, the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Lots, and I mean lots, of feedback on the Washington football team off its loss to the Eagles at FedEx Field. Tweet from Eric, this team is not a talented team, with the exceptions of Terry McLaurin, Daron Payne, and Jonathan Allen. Tweet from CRC, the Dan Snyder sadness machine rolls on. Tweet from Landover Cal, we build the team up and drop in a quarterback. How is that plan working going into year 3 with 0 answers at quarterback? Yeah, Landover Cal, that plan has not worked out this season. But when it comes to going into year 3 with no answers at quarterback, well, that's why this offseason is so, so massive. So we do not go into year 3 of the Ron Rivera era with 0 answers at quarterback. Email from Mike P. The disappointment that this team brings me is like no other. I think we overhyped this team just because we have a different regime than the last, thinking it has to be better, right? Wrong. This is no different than it has been over the last decade. No franchise quarterback, inconsistent defense, not enough talent around Terry McLaurin, can't reach 500, benchgate, ownership turmoil, injuries, players fighting, the list goes on and on. The inconsistencies with this organization are almost too much for anyone to handle. Thank you for that email, Mike. Hard to disagree with anything that you said. Email from Josh. Writes Josh, so I started my drive back from Florida with my family on Saturday at 1 p.m. Traffic was bumper to bumper in South Carolina on 95. It had rained from Richmond all the way to home in Odenton. We got home at 5 a.m. I caught 5 hours of sleep and then headed to the game with my 10-year-old son. We stayed and endured the whole game until the bitter end. I told my son I was proud of him for sticking it out. His response was, well, at least we're not Jets fans. Monday is my 45th birthday, parentheses, Mike Sellers number. I would have liked to have gotten that win. Can I at least get a happy birthday from the great Al Galdi? Well, geez, flattery will get you everywhere, Josh. I don't know that me saying happy birthday comes close to a Washington football team win, but I can at least try. So yes, Josh, happy birthday. And I hope your drive back home was better than my drive back home. Email from Kurt Martin in Concord, Virginia, writes Kurt, there's nothing much to say at this point. What's left of the fan base simply deserves better. I'm tired of all of the they fought hard stories. We deserve better across the board. Yeah, man, the they played hard, they fought hard stuff. I mean, it's nice. It's better than not playing hard, not fighting, not trying hard. But that stuff only goes so far. You're right about that. We all deserve better, and we hope for better. We yearn for better. We think that we may be on the verge of better, and then we get a 6-10 non-playoff season like the one that we now have. And unless Washington gets itself a franchise quarterback and upgrades a number of other positions, there's a really good chance that we'll be having a similar conversation at this time next year. But at least we have each other, right? At least we have each other. So there is that. We have a community, a bond with this podcast. We are here for each other. Just like Dr. George Verghese of the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland is always there for you. Dr. George Verghese, he is a board-certified dermatologist and Mohs surgeon. He is one of the nation's premier dermatologists, and operating under his direction is the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland. The Institute focuses on medical skincare, cosmetic procedures, and skin cancer diagnosis and comprehensive care. Dr. George Verghese and the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland offer treatments for conditions such as acne, psoriasis, and eczema. Dr. George Verghese and the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland offer state-of-the-art services such as Botox, laser hair removal, and chemical peels. Dr. George Verghese and the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland offer advanced treatments for many skin cancers. Heck, Dr. George Verghese and the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland offer free skin cancer screenings. Yes, free. To find out more, call 301-396-3401. Make sure you tell them that Al Galdi sent you. That phone number again, 301-396-3401, or visit midatlanticskin.com. That's midatlanticskin.com. Dr. George Verghese in the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland. All right, well, here is something that says a lot about a lot, was put out there by Washington football team insider Matthew Paris of the Washington Times on Sunday. Jay Gruden threw 32 games with Washington, 13-19. Ron Rivera threw 32 games with Washington, 13-19. And there you go. The more things change, the more they stay the same. And no, I'm not suggesting that Ron Rivera is the equivalent of Jay Gruden, but it just feels like no matter what, man, we're always in more or less the same place as fans of this team that we currently call the Washington football team. And with all of that established, time now for the front five, my five biggest takeaways of the Washington football team falling to 6-10 and being officially eliminated from playoff contention with a 2016 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles at FedEx Field on Sunday afternoon. Takeaway number one, Washington officially is not making the playoffs for the 23rd time in 29 seasons. I want you to think about that for a moment. 23 times in 29 seasons. That is incredible. That is, as I tweeted on Sunday, a mind-blowing run of ineptitude. And I don't think that that stat is shocking, okay? It is a stat that I've brought up before. Washington now not making the playoffs in 23 of the last 29 seasons. And I mean, if you've been paying attention, you know that Washington has only made the playoffs a handful of times over the last three decades. But still, all of those things do not make this stat, this fact, this reality any more acceptable or palatable. That the team we currently refer to as the Washington football team now officially has not made the playoffs in 23 of the last 29 seasons is some kind of pill we all must swallow as fans of this team. I mean, 29 seasons, 1993 through 2021. And what's so funny about that is this. Those 29 seasons, again, 1993 through 2021, are the precise entirety of the NFL's salary cap era. The salary cap era, which includes modern free agency, started with the 1993 offseason. So in a time in which the NFL, more than ever before, has been set up for every team to be good over time, has been set up to be a league of parity, has been set up so that no team should be consistently bad, Washington has been consistently bad. It's amazing. Now, note those years, 1993 through 2021. This run did not start with Dan Snyder. This is a key point that doesn't get talked about nearly enough. This run started with Jack Kent Cook. The dirty little secret, the inconvenient truth that people don't like to talk about is that the last 6 years of the Cook ownership, 1993 through 1998, were not good years for the franchise. Washington had a lot of problems during those years. But of course, Washington's next owner, Dan Snyder, a.k.a. Mr. Snyder, a.k.a. Danny Boy, a.k.a. The Danny, has made things worse. Has made things so much worse.
First off, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving, Danny. By the way, Sunday, the two-year anniversary of the Ron Rivera introductory press conference as Washington head coach, a.k.a. the two-year anniversary of Danny Boy saying happy Thanksgiving. Washington this season is missing the playoffs for a 23rd time in 29 seasons. That really is unreal, and yet it is so real. It is our reality. Takeaway number two, Taylor Heinicke got off to a white-hot start, but then cooled off considerably. Tay-Tay, he had been horrendous in each of his last two games. Washington's two losses to the Dallas Cowboys. As I suspected, he was much better in this game, and he was on fire to begin the game. Taylor Heinicke began the game 11 of 11 for 137 yards. Heinicke in the first half went 14 of 17 for 170 yards. That works out to 10 yards per pass attempt. That's outstanding. But Heinicke in the second half went 13 of 19 for just 77 yards. That works out to a microscopic 4.05 yards per pass attempt. And he threw a killer interception. Taylor Heinicke threw a game-sealing and really season-sealing interception. Washington's eighth offensive drive began with Washington trailing 2016 with 2:21 left in the fourth quarter. Heinicke had Washington driving, and this looked like this might be another instance of Taylor Heinicke being the hero. But on the 11th snap of the drive, on a first and 10 for Washington at the Eagles 20 with 30 seconds left in the fourth quarter, Taylor Heinicke overthrew John Bates, who did fall down, although he may not have made the catch anyway, on a deep shotgun pass, and the ball was intercepted in the end zone by safety Rodney McLeod. Rodney McLeod, a local, he went to DeMatha Catholic High School in Hyattsville, Maryland, then went to the University of Virginia. Also, Taylor Heinicke had a near pick on Washington's second offensive drive, resulted in Joey Sly's first quarter 31-yard field goal. The sixth snap of the drive and a first and 10 for Washington at the Eagles 22. Taylor Heinicke, while under major duress, chucked the ball downfield, but didn't throw the ball far enough for it to go out of bounds. And the result was an apparent interception by linebacker Jannard Avery, but the snap ended up being an no play due to a 5-yard illegal contact penalty by Avery. What isn't clear is this. Did Heinicke throw that pass, which was a reckless pass, because he knew that a penalty had been called and thus had a free play? Or was Heinicke just, you know, YOLOing it, okay? I mean, was Heinicke just saying, ah, the heck with it, let's see what happens, you know? Because I think that's a big deal right there. Like, did Heinicke know that that was a free play, or was Heinicke not aware that that was a free play? Because if the former was the case, then I don't consider that to be a near pick because Heinicke knew what he was doing. If the latter was the case, well, then that's different. Taylor Heinicke didn't know that a penalty was coming and that he, you know, still made that throw is an indictment of Taylor Heinicke. That's being reckless. So we'll have to try to find out some more about that. So you had the pick by Heinicke. You had the near pick by Heinicke. You also had Taylor Heinicke taking three sacks. He was under pressure for a good bit of the game. I tell you, we really have seen Washington's offensive line, which had been great this season, come back down to earth in recent weeks. The injuries and absences finally are catching up to the offensive line. Washington's starting offensive line for this game. So Charles Leno Jr. at left tackle, as has been the case throughout this season for Washington. But Sadiq Charles was at left guard. Eric Flowers did not play in this game due to being on the reserve COVID-19 list. Washington on Friday placed Flowers on the reserve COVID-19 list. And Sadiq in this game suffered a knee injury late in the second quarter. You had Keith Ismail again as Washington's starting center. Washington's fourth string center was Washington's starting center for a third consecutive game. Is Washington's top three centers, Chase Roullier, Tyler Larson, and Wes Schweitzer, all are on the reserve injured list. Brandon Sheriff was back at right guard, but Cornelius Lucas was at right tackle. Samuel Cosmi did not play in this game due to being on the reserve COVID-19 list. Washington on Thursday placed Cosme on the reserve COVID-19 list. So when it comes to Taylor Heinicke taking three sacks, being under pressure a bunch, you obviously don't blame Heinicke for that. That said, though, it would have been nice to have seen him avoid, say, the killer sack that he took on Washington's sixth offensive drive, resulted in a late third quarter punt, the seventh snap of the drive on a 3rd and 9 for Washington at its 31. Taylor Heinicke took a sack from linebacker Jannard Avery for a 13-yard loss. I mean, that's a lot of yardage to lose on a sack like that. Was there a way to avoid that sack? I mean, I'm not saying it's easy, okay? I recognize it's not easy, but throw the football away. Try to figure out a way not to get sacked like that. Taylor Heinicke now has been sacked 11 times over his last 3 games. I also want to say this. I thought that Taylor Heinicke was failed by Scott Turner to an extent. I like a lot about Scott Turner. I've talked about this, but there are some things that to me are head scratchers. And in this game, I thought we had some head scratching stuff. First of all, the plan for this game for Washington offensively should have been to throw the football a bunch. I talked about this during Rhyming Keys on Friday's show, episode 219. The Eagles, through week 16 of this season for Football Outsiders DVOA metric, were number 21 in the NFL in pass defense versus being number 12 in the NFL in run defense. The Eagles, in 5 of their first 15 games this regular season, had allowed the opposing quarterback to complete at least 80% of his pass attempts. 80%! And Washington for this game was without its top 2 running backs in Antonio Gibson, who's on the reserve COVID-19 list, and J.D. McKissic, who's on the reserve injured list. So bad Eagles pass defense. Eagles have gotten scorched by opposing quarterbacks on the regular this season. Washington is sans its top 2 running backs. I mean, to me, that's a formula saying, hey, throw the football a lot. And you then had Taylor Heinicke getting off to his terrific start. Again, 11 of 11 for 137 yards. And yet, Washington in the first half had 19 passing plays versus 16 running plays. And I just thought that Washington could have been even more aggressive throwing the football in the first half. And even in, say, the third quarter. Now, Washington got more aggressive throwing the football in the fourth quarter because of the nature of the game. I understand there's context and nuance to all of these things. I just felt like, you know what, man, come out chucking. And while for a little while it looked like Washington did come out chucking, the chucking was not sustained as the game went on. There's also this too with Scott Turner. You know, Taylor Heinicke again got pressured a bunch. Scott Turner to me is still not doing enough in the way of calling things to help out Heinicke. You know, play action boots, sprint outs, read option looks. What is up with the lack of read option looks for Washington this season? You have a super mobile quarterback in Taylor Heinicke. I know that he's been dealing with a knee, but the knee thing is relatively recent. We have seen very few read option looks with Taylor Heinicke at quarterback for Washington this season. Why is that? Why have there been so few read option looks with a quarterback as mobile as Heinicke for Washington this season? Read option looks can help to protect a quarterback, and yet we have not seen many of them this season. And then you had a play call that was an absolute disaster. And look, I mean, it's you can always nitpick individual play calls, I understand that, but good God, this play call was a mess. Washington's 7th offensive drive resulted in a 4th quarter turnover on downs. The 5th snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke had a 1st and 10 under center, double play action completion to Jonathan Williams from minus 4 yards on a screen that had no chance and that took about an hour and a half to develop. You're having trouble protecting Taylor Heinicke. Why do you call a play like this with double play action? Again, the play took forever to develop, and it was a screen, and Washington, for whatever reason this season, has been abysmal on screens. So I just thought there were some things in this game with Scott Turner that could have been better. But, you know, all of those things said, Taylor Heinicke did make a number of good plays in this game. Let's make this clear. This was a bounce-back game for Taylor Heinicke in a lot of ways. Now, he wasn't great, okay? I mean, Washington scored 16 points the entire game, but he was a lot better in this game as compared to his two previous games. Taylor Heinicke was outstanding on Washington's first offensive drive. This was the first offensive drive of the game. Six plays, 67 yards resulted in Jarrett Patterson's first quarter, first and 10, 11-yard under-center handoff touchdown run. Taylor Heinicke on the drive, 3 of 3 for 50 yards. Third snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a 3rd and 4, 16-yard shotgun completion to Cam Sims, who made a nice leaping and spinning catch. The fourth snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a 1st and 10, 10-yard shotgun play action completion to Adam Humphries, who made a nice catch of a low throw off Heinicke running to his right. The fifth snap of the drive and the snap right before the touchdown, Taylor Heinicke, a 1st and 10, 24-yard shotgun play action completion to John Bates. Taylor Heinicke had big completions on each of 3 consecutive snaps on Washington's second offensive drive. This was the drive that resulted in the Joey Sly first quarter 31-yard field goal. Third snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a 3rd and 1, 8-yard shotgun play action completion to Ricky Seals-Jones, despite Heinicke being pressured by edge defender Derek Barnett and getting blasted by linebacker Alex Singleton. The fourth snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a 1st and 10, 25-yard under center play action completion to Deami Brown. The fifth snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a 1st and 10, 12-yard shotgun completion to Terry McLaurin, who gave a great stiff arm to get by linebacker Alex Singleton for the yak necessary for a first down. Taylor Heinicke made multiple nice plays on Washington's third offensive drive. This was the drive that resulted in the Joey Sly second quarter 39-yard field goal. First snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a 1st and 10, 12-yard pistol play action completion to Terry McLaurin on a receiver screen. Third snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a 2nd and 7, 4-yard under center play action boot scramble on which he evaded interior defensive lineman Milton Williams, who had made his way into Washington's backfield. The fifth snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a 1st and 10, 12-yard shotgun play action completion to Jarrett Patterson. The sixth snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a 1st and 10, 11-yard shotgun completion to Jonathan Williams. Taylor Heinicke had 2 big completions on back-to-back snaps on a late first half scoring drive for Washington. Washington's fourth offensive drive, this drive started at the Washington 6, resulted in Joey Sly's 55-yard field goal with 1 second left in the second quarter. The seventh snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a 1st and 10, 18-yard shotgun completion to Cam Sims. The eighth snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a 1st and 10, 9-yard shotgun completion to Terry McLaurin. You had Washington's sixth offensive drive. This did result in a late third quarter punt, but the second snap of the drive on a 1st and 14 for Washington at its 5, Taylor Heinicke fired a bullet on an 11-yard shotgun completion to Terry McLaurin. The fourth snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke had a 1st and 10, 10-yard under center play action scramble. And then Taylor Heinicke on the drive that resulted in his interception did make some big throws. Like, it's easy to forget this because of how the drive ended, but Taylor Heinicke had Washington driving. And this, to me, was taking the shape of a game-winning drive being authored by Taylor Heinicke until the drive was not a game-winning drive. But the third snap of the drive, the snap right before the second half 2-minute warning, 3rd and 10 for Washington at its 25, Taylor Heinicke, a 10-yard shotgun completion to John Bates. The sixth snap of the drive on a 3rd and 1 for Washington at its 44, Taylor Heinicke, a 9-yard shotgun completion to Jarrett Patterson. The seventh snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a 1st and 10, 12-yard shotgun completion to Cam Sims. The 10th snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a 3rd and 5, 10-yard shotgun completion to Jarrett Patterson. So there was a lot to like from Taylor Heinicke in this game, but ultimately 16 points, nowhere near good enough, and that late game interception ends up being the nail in the coffin for Washington in this game and in this season from a playoff contending standpoint. Ron Rivera, during his post-game press conference on Sunday on Taylor Heinicke's performance in the loss to the Eagles.
I thought Taylor was solid, sound, you know, made good decisions. He got a little careless on that one penalty. Thank goodness there was a penalty. You'd like to see, you know, just go ahead and throw it away at that point. And but I thought he did some good things. I thought he gave us a chance. You know, it, unfortunately, like I said, there were just a couple of plays that we as a team just didn't make.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to subject you to yet another conversation about Taylor Heinicke and what can he be and where are we going with Taylor Heinicke. At this point, I think it is as clear as can be. The Washington football team this offseason is going to be going all out on trying to get itself a franchise quarterback. Doesn't mean that Taylor Heinicke won't be back for next season. I think he absolutely should be back, and maybe he'll even be Washington's starting quarterback to begin next season, depending on what Washington does this coming offseason at the quarterback position. But we have, I think, a pretty good handle at this point on what Taylor Heinicke can be, and that is a really good backup quarterback, and for a while, a good starting quarterback for you, but there just has been too much variance in his performance this season, even when you factor in that, yes, Washington's offense has been wrecked by injury and COVID-19 absence for so much of this season. By the way, so much for Kyle Allen playing, huh? I mean, of all of the conversation regarding the potential of Kyle Allen playing, he did not play at all on Sunday. I said on Friday's show, episode 219, that I did not think that Taylor Heinicke would get benched on Sunday against the Eagles if Heinicke played really well against the Eagles, and sure enough, he did not get benched. Going to be interesting to see if Ron Rivera starts or plays Kyle Allen in the season finale at the New York Giants this Sunday afternoon, given that Washington now has been officially eliminated from postseason contention. I don't really think that you get a lot out of, okay, let's start Kyle Allen and let's see what he has. Like, this game is a total nothing game, this game for Washington at the Giants this Sunday. But I guess you could say, well, it's a tip of the cap to Kyle for coming back from his ankle injury and for having been a good soldier throughout this season. And, you know, what are you going to gain with another game from Heinicke here? Like, at this point, you know, we have a pretty good handle on what he is, what he isn't. You know, maybe you give Kyle Allen the nod for this game at the Giants. It really doesn't matter, to be truthful. But we'll see. You know, we could see Kyle Allen at the Giants, and not just in relief. Maybe, in fact, as Washington's starting quarterback. Again, Washington is done. Washington has been eliminated from postseason contention. Well, don't ever eliminate your rights. If you've been wronged, a law firm that is ready to represent you is Paulson and Nace. Paulson and Nace handles complex personal injury, medical negligence, and wrongful death cases. The services of Paulson and Nace are available in D.C. and West Virginia. Paulson and Nace is a family law firm. The Naces are DMV through and through, big Washington football team fans. Paulson and Nace has decades of experience trying cases to jury verdicts and fighting for those injured through no fault of their own. Chris Nace is a past president of the D.C. Trial Lawyers. Matt Nace is a member of the board of the D.C. Trial Lawyers. I've known the Naces for years, 25 plus years. These are good people and smart people who are excellent at what they do. Paulson and Nace has recovered millions of dollars for the sick and injured. It's very simple. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. No law firm is better. If you feel as if you've been wronged, if you have a complex personal injury, medical negligence, or wrongful death case, or think that you may have one, but aren't sure, if you have questions, call Paulson and Nace and schedule a no-obligation appointment. Yeah, you're obligated to nothing. Call Paulson and Nace at 202-902-7611. That phone number again, 202-902-7611. And when you call, make sure that you tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Schedule your no-obligation appointment by calling 202-902-7611 and see what Paulson and Nace can do for you. Paulson and Nace, when tragedy happens, let their family take care of yours. This is The Front Five, as I take care of you with my five biggest takeaways off the Washington football team falling to 6-10 and being officially eliminated from playoff contention with a 2016 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles at FedEx Field on Sunday afternoon. Takeaway number three, Washington's defense was good, but not good enough. So let's make this clear. Washington's defense was much better than it was in Washington's previous game, the 56-14 scrimmage loss at the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday Night Football in Week 16. It would have been hard for Washington's defense not to be better than it was in that game. Now, Washington's defense continues to be without a number of key players. Corner William Jackson III was inactive for Sunday's loss to the Eagles at FedEx Field due to his calf injury. So he was out for a second consecutive game. Edge defender Montez Sweat was inactive for Sunday's game against the Eagles due to personal reasons off the shooting death of his brother. Edge defender James Smith-Williams was inactive for Sunday's game against the Eagles. He's been dealing with what has been labeled an illness. Corner Daryl Roberts is on the reserve COVID-19 list. He didn't play on Sunday. You, of course, have on Washington's reserve injured list the likes of edge defender Chase Young and safety/linebacker Landon Collins. So a lot of key pieces are missing for Washington's defense right now. But the defense, I thought, overall played well in this game on Sunday against the Eagles. I mean, to me, Washington's defense has been good in six of the team's last eight games, but was only good for the first time in three games with this performance against the Eagles at FedEx Field on Sunday. Now, the bad for Washington's defense in this game was it getting torched by Eagles quarterback Jalen Hurts for a second time in 3 weeks. Jalen Hurts rather quickly has become a Washington killer. He feasts on Washington, and he feasted again on Sunday. Washington allowed Jalen Hurts to go 17-26 for 214 yards. That works out to 8.23 yards per pass attempt. Now, Washington held Jalen Hurts to no touchdown passes, but Washington also didn't generate any interceptions, generated just one sack, and Washington allowed Jalen Hurts to have seven carries for 44 yards, 6.29 yards per carry. The Eagles' second offensive drive, 11 plays, 80 yards, resulted in running back Boston Scott's second quarter, fourth and goal, two-yard shotgun handoff, touchdown run. Washington on this drive allowed Jalen Hurts to go 5 of 6 for 68 yards. The Eagles' fourth offensive drive was the opening drive of the second half. This drive, in so many ways, changed the game. This was a 14-play, 75-yard drive that consumed 7 minutes, 39 seconds off the clock, resulted in running back Boston Scott's third quarter, fourth and goal, 1 yard under center toss touchdown run despite Jalen Hurts tripping and falling down on the toss. The seventh snap of the drive on a 3rd and 4 for the Eagles at the Washington 40. Washington gave up a Jalen Hurts 13-yard shotgun completion to tight end Dallas Goedert. 11th snap of the drive on a 3rd and 14 for the Eagles at the Washington 31. Washington gave up a Jalen Hurts 27-yard shotgun completion to receiver Greg Ward on a broken play. Hurts was really impressive in this game. Eagles' first offensive drive did result in a first quarter turnover on downs, but the second snap of the drive, Danny Johnson fell down in his coverage of receiver Devontae Smith on a Jalen Hurts 2nd and 10, 30-yard under center play action completion to Smith despite a quarterback hit by Jonathan Allen. Eagles' third offensive drive did result in a second quarter punt, but the third snap of the drive on a 3rd and 8 for the Eagles at their 27. Washington gave up a 22-yard shotgun scramble by Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts did Washington dirty for a second time in three games. Washington, in its 27-17 loss at the Eagles in Week 15, allowed Jalen Hurts to go 20 of 26 for 296 yards, a touchdown and an interception, and he had 8 carries for 38 yards and 2 touchdowns. However, there was enough good from Washington's defense on Sunday afternoon to where the defense very much gave Washington a chance to win. Washington held the Eagles to just 20 points. You love that. Washington held the Eagles to just 4 of 12 on third downs. Didn't always feel that way, because the Eagles did have some big third down conversions, but still, ultimately for the game, Washington held the Eagles to just 4 of 12 on third downs, and Washington largely stopped the run. Washington held all Eagles who weren't quarterback Jalen Hurts to a combined 27 carries for 74 yards, 2.74 yards per carry. Now, included in that mix were the two touchdown runs by Boston Scott. And it is worth noting, too, that Eagles running back Miles Sanders was inactive for this game due to a broken hand. And Eagles running back Jordan Howard was questionable for this game due to a stinger. But we saw a lot of good defense from Washington on Sunday. Eagles' first offensive drive resulted in a first quarter turnover on downs. The fifth snap of the drive, Kendall Fuller tackled receiver Jalen Reagor for a 3-yard loss on a 1st and 10 under center end-around run. The eighth snap of the drive, on a 4th and 1 for the Eagles at the Washington 24, Matt Ioannidis and Cameron Curl stuffed running back Jordan Howard on a shotgun handoff run for no gain. The Eagles' third offensive drive resulted in a second quarter punt. The second snap of the drive, Tim Settle split a double team and then tackled running back Jordan Howard for a 3-yard loss on a 2nd and 5 under center handoff run. Really impressive play by Tim Settle. The sixth snap of the drive, on a 3rd and 2 for the Eagles at the Washington 43, Jamin Davis had a sack for a two-yard loss. Now, the sack came off Cole Holcomb having had Jalen Hurts wrapped up, but Holcomb didn't take Hurts to the ground, presumably out of fear of getting penalized, but that was a good play for Washington's defense. More on Jamin Davis coming up momentarily. The Eagles' fourth offensive drive. This was the opening drive of the second half. This was that mammoth 14-play drive that resulted in running back Boston Scott's third quarter, fourth and goal, 1 yard under center toss touchdown run. But on this drive, ninth snap of it, David Mayo tackled Boston Scott for a 3 yard loss on a Jalen Hurts second and six shotgun completion to Scott. Remember, Washington got shredded by the Eagles rushing attack in Washington's loss at the Eagles in week 15. In that game, Eagles running backs Miles Sanders and Jordan Howard combined for 33 carries for 200 yards, 6.06 yards per carry. Much different story on Sunday. Again, Sanders was out. Howard was coming off a stinger. But I do want to go back to a name that I just mentioned, David Mayo. So the snap counts for this game are not out as of the taping of this show late night on Sunday night, but it sure did seem as if David Mayo on Sunday played a lot more than Jamin Davis. And that's not good, my friends. That is an indictment of where Jamin Davis is at. Your first round pick in the next to last game of a non-playoff season should not be taking a backseat to a journeyman who is a special teams specialist in David Mayo. All due respect to David Mayo. This is Ron Rivera during his post-game press conference on Sunday on David Mayo in this loss to the Eagles at FedEx Field, apparently playing quite a bit more than Jamin Davis played.
Well, I thought, you know, some of the things that David did last week just kind of showed what he's capable of. And what it also did was it took a little bit of pressure off of Cole. You know, David's a pure mic, so we put David in that role, and we were able to use Cole in more of a what we call a dime position. You know, the weak side, inside backer of a nickel package. And I thought that combination looked pretty good, pretty stout.
All right. Ron then addressed this. Is it not disappointing that Jamin Davis wasn't trusted to play more than David Mayo?
Not necessarily. Again, he's a rookie. And I know he's a first-round pick, but he's still a rookie no matter how you look at it. And these young guys, they show you what they can do, and they're going to make mistakes. But you know there's growth, and that's the most important thing. You know, it's like Diami. You know, probably ever since Diami started playing special teams, he's turned it into a little more confident player. He made a big tackle on the kickoff for us in coverage. Made a big catch, you know, shows you what he's capable of doing. And, you know, again, as these young guys get more and more opportunities and they show what you know, what they can do, there's promise. So that's the biggest thing for us.
Look, I don't blame Ron for trying to spin this, but come on, okay? This is concerning that Jamin Davis in week 17 of an 18-week regular season isn't seen as good enough to play ahead of David Mayo. I mean, what are we talking about here? Takeaway number four, two bright spots for Washington on offense, John Bates and Jarrett Patterson. I like so much of what we're seeing from John Bates right now. I don't want to overreact because it's not like he's putting up gargantuan numbers here, but you tell you what, for a fourth round pick at a Boise State, John Bates in his rookie season is ascending, unlike apparently Jamin Davis. John Bates on Sunday, three receptions for 35 yards on four targets. Washington's first offensive drive, this the first offensive drive of the game, resulted in the Jarrett Patterson first quarter, first and 10, 11-yard under center handoff touchdown run. The fifth snap of the drive, the snap right before the touchdown, Taylor Heinicke, a first and 10, 24-yard shotgun play action completion to John Bates. Washington's eighth offensive drive, this was the drive that resulted in the Taylor Heinicke first and 10 shotgun interception to safety Rodney McLeod in the end zone in the final minute of the fourth quarter. But on the third snap of the drive, the snap right before the second half 2 minute warning, on a third and 10 for Washington at its 25, Taylor Heinicke, a 10-yard shotgun completion to John Bates, who plowed through two Eagles defenders, corner Darius Slay and linebacker TJ Edwards, for the yak necessary for the first down We so far in John Bates' brief NFL career have seen not just a sure-handedness, but also a physicality, and not just in blocking, but also in generating yardage after catch. John Bates is showing himself to be a pretty nice yak guy here. And as I keep saying, you know, with Logan Thomas dealing with a torn ACL that was suffered in December, we don't know what his availability for the start of the 2022 regular season will be. It may well be that John Bates is Washington's top tight end going into next regular season. And, you know, I don't want to plant the flag of victory here, but I think Washington has itself something in John Bates. I like a lot of what we're seeing from this guy right now. I also want to give praise to Jarrett Patterson. So you had Antonio Gibson not playing on Sunday due to him being on the reserve COVID-19 list. By the way, he may not have played anyway because he was trending in a negative direction in terms of his practice availability last week due to a hip injury. Gibson had been listed as not practicing on Wednesday and Thursday due to a hip injury. So like I said, he may not have played anyway on Sunday, even if he had not landed on the reserve COVID-19 list. But anyway, no Gibson for Sunday. No J.D. McKissic, of course. He has been on the reserve injured list for weeks. And so Jarrett Patterson was Washington's RB1 for Sunday. And I thought Jarrett Patterson did a pretty good job. 12 carries for 57 yards and a touchdown. 5 receptions for 41 yards on 5 targets. The guy finished with 98 scrimmage yards on 17 touches. Jarrett Patterson had a touchdown run. Washington's first offensive drive was the first offensive drive of the game. 6 plays, 67 yards resulted in Jarrett Patterson's first quarter, first and 10, 11-yard under center handoff touchdown run. Really good-looking run by Patterson. But he had a number of other good plays in this game. Third offensive drive for Washington resulted in Joey Sly's second quarter, 39-yard field goal. Fifth snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a first and 10, 12-yard shotgun play action completion to Jarrett Patterson. 8th snap of the drive, Jarrett Patterson, a 1st and 5, 5-yard under center handoff run. Washington's 4th offensive drive started at the Washington 6, resulted in Joey Sly's 55-yard field goal with 1 second left in the second quarter. 1st snap of the drive, the snap right before the first half, 2-minute warning on a 1st and 10 for Washington at its 6. Jarrett Patterson, a big 8-yard shotgun handoff run, got Washington some breathing room. 6th snap of the drive, Jarrett Patterson, a 3rd and 1, 8-yard shotgun handoff run. Washington's 6th offensive drive did result in a late 3rd quarter punt, but the 3rd snap of the drive, Jarrett Patterson, a 2nd and 3, 4-yard shotgun handoff run. Washington's 7th offensive drive resulted in a 4th quarter turnover on downs, but the 2nd snap of the drive, Jarrett Patterson, a 2nd and 9, 8-yard shotgun handoff run. Jarrett Patterson looked good. Ron Rivera during his postgame press conference on Sunday on Jarrett Patterson's performance.
I thought he did a nice job. I think Jarrett's one of those young guys that the more experience he gets, the more opportunities he gets, the better he's going to be. He's a young, dynamic player that, you know, definitely, you know, can fit a role for you. He gives you everything he got. And I thought he did a nice job. I really did.
And he did. And takeaway number 5, I do believe that Washington has found itself a kicker in Joey Sly. This has been a very tumultuous season for Washington at kicker, but it sure feels like the season is ending with Washington having found itself some stability at kicker. So Washington on Sunday for a second consecutive game had 2 kickers on the team's active roster, Joey Sly and Brian Johnson. And for a second consecutive game, Sly was active and Johnson was inactive. Washington on Christmas activated Joey Sly off the reserve injured list. Washington on November 30th signed Brian Johnson off the Chicago Bears practice squad and placed Joey Sly on the reserve injured list due to a hamstring injury that Sly had suffered in the win over the Seattle Seahawks at FedEx Field on Monday Night Football in Week 12. Presumably, the reason that Washington is carrying 2 kickers on the team's active roster is the COVID-19 situation. And so if you have a kicker who lands on the reserve COVID-19 list, you don't have to go hunting and searching for another kicker. You already have another kicker on your active roster. It's actually a pretty smart move by Washington if, in fact, you have the luxury of spending 2 53-man roster spots on kickers. Anyway, Joey Sly was great on Sunday. 3 of 3 on field goals, and he made his only extra point attempt Joey Sly connected on a 31-yard field goal with 2 minutes left in the first quarter for a 10-0 Washington lead. Joey Sly connected on a 39-yard field goal with 5:36 left in the second quarter for a 13-7 Washington lead. And Joey Sly connected on a 55-yard field goal with 1 second left in the second quarter for a 16-7 Washington lead. Joey Sly now is 9 of 9 on field goals and 8 of 9 on extra points over 5 games as Washington's kicker. Yeah, he has yet to miss a field goal attempt as a Washington kicker. It was on November 9th that Washington released Chris Blewett and signed Joey Sly. Now, Joey Sly in this 2021 regular season had been the Houston Texans kicker for 3 games in September and the San Francisco 49ers kicker for 3 games in October. Joey Sly, in his 6 total regular season games this season prior to signing with Washington, had gone 11-13 on field goals, including going 3-3 on field goal attempts of at least 50 yards. So he actually has been really good on field goals throughout this season. Now 20 of 22 on the season. He's been especially good on field goal attempts of at least 50 yards. The problem for Joey Sly actually had been on extra point attempts. Joey Sly, in his 6 total regular season games this season prior to signing with Washington, had gone just 9 of 12 on extra points, including just 2 of 4 on extra points over his 3 games with the 49ers in October. But Joey Sly, so far, so good with Washington. And it's nice to see this because this had become a real issue for Washington this season, right? The kicking position of Washington saying bye-bye to Dustin Hopkins. Well, Joey Sly may ultimately end up being your long-term successor to Dustin Hopkins. So there you go, the front five, my 5 biggest takeaways off the Washington football team falling to 6-10 and being officially eliminated from postseason contention with a 2016 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles at FedEx Field on Sunday afternoon. Takeaway number one, Washington officially is not making the playoffs for the 23rd time in 29 seasons. Takeaway number two, Taylor Heinicke got off to a white-hot start, but then cooled off considerably. Takeaway number three, Washington's defense was good, but not good enough. Takeaway number four, 2 bright spots for Washington on offense, John Bates and Jarrett Patterson. And takeaway number five, I do believe that Washington has found itself a kicker in Joey Sly. Up next, much more on the Washington football team, including a look at what we should want from Washington in its season finale at the New York Giants this Sunday afternoon. And you'll hear Ron Rivera on Washington's maturity and effort. I'll get to all of that and more after this.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All All right, more now on the Washington football team after falling to 6-10 and being officially eliminated from playoff contention with a 2016 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles at FedEx Field on Sunday afternoon. So just one game left for Washington in its 2021 season at the New York Giants this Sunday afternoon at 1. The Giants are atrocious. They fell to 4-12 with a 29-3 loss at the Chicago Bears on Sunday afternoon. Here's the problem, okay? Washington has a great chance of winning this season finale at the Giants, and that's not what Washington needs. There is no significant value in Washington winning this season finale at the Giants and finishing 7-10. At this point, finish 6-11 and get as high of a first-round pick in the 2022 NFL draft as possible. And understand what I'm saying when I say that. I'm not saying for Washington players to actively throw the game this Sunday at the Giants. What I am saying is Ron Rivera needs to find a way for his guys to play hard, but ultimately lose. And maybe that means resting some key players. Maybe that means, you know, going for two after every touchdown. Maybe that means going forward on every fourth down. I don't know. But do what you have to do. Because with Washington now officially eliminated from postseason contention, a win at a terrible Giants team does nothing for Washington, okay? There's no carryover from winning in Week 18 into the 2022 season, all right? Lose the game, get as high of a first-round pick in the 2022 NFL draft as possible. And, you know, people who say, well, that's loser talk. No, it's not, okay? That's actually, I think, the smart way of looking at things. That's wanting what truly is best for your football team. And that's all I have ever wanted. I know that is all what so many of you ever want for this team. What is in the best interest of the team? And what is in the best interest of the team is the team losing this game. I said this weeks ago now. I wanted Washington over its final three regular season games to either win out or lose out. Well, Washington has lost the first two of those three games, so you might as well make it a trifecta and lose all three. And yes, end up losing out. Here was Ron Rivera during his post-game press conference on Sunday on if his Washington football team this season has ever truly shown the maturity that Ron has been saying for months that he has wanted to see.
Well, I think we have moments. I really do. I think we still have a way to grow, though. You know, it's one of those things we'll continue to grow. You know, but we showed what we are capable of. We showed some resilience at times. And then sometimes we just, you know, it was overwhelming. You know, and I think that's a good word for the last couple of weeks for these guys. It was overwhelming on them. And as I said last week, you know, these are young men that had to deal with an awful lot. But I think, you know, this is something that we'll grow from, we'll learn from, and hopefully next year, you know, not next year, but next week, we'll come out and we'll play to our abilities.
Yeah, we'll see. I will say this, though. It was good to see Washington in this loss to the Eagles at FedEx Field play hard and put forth a much better showing as compared to the embarrassment that was Washington's previous game, the 56-14 loss at the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday Night Football in Week 16. I mean, that loss at the Cowboys was disturbing, okay? I mean, that was troubling. That was a game that made you, as I said, question everything. Now, at least, you could say, all right, that was a really bad performance. And, you know, Washington still lost on Sunday to the Eagles at FedEx Field, but at least Washington put forth a respectable, professional performance. Here was Ron Rivera during his post-game press conference on Sunday on if he was pleased with his players' effort in the loss to the Eagles.
I was pleased with their effort. I really was. I thought they were able to handle some things pretty good this past week. You know, I thought they practiced well on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You know, they did the things that they needed to. And, you know, I like what we were doing on offense and defense. You know, it's just unfortunately there were a couple plays that we didn't make, a couple plays we allowed to happen. And that's really the difference. I mean, the hard part is, you know, kick field goals and you're not going to win a lot of games kicking too many field goals when you have an opportunity to score touchdowns.
No, you're not. You're also not going to win a lot of games when you're blowing 10-0 leads. This loss featured Washington blowing a 10-0 first half lead in a loss to the Eagles for a second time in 3 weeks. Washington, in its 27-17 loss at the Eagles in week 15, blew a 10-0 first quarter lead that extended into the second quarter. And Washington, in this 2016 loss to the Eagles at FedEx Field in week 17, blew a 10-0 first quarter lead that extended into the second quarter. Ricky Seals-Jones, frightening scene in the second quarter on Sunday afternoon. Him being stretchered off the field with a neck injury. Washington's third offensive drive resulted in Joey Sly's second quarter 39-yard field goal. The 11th snap of the drive, the snap right before the field goal on a 3rd-and-12 at the Eagles 21. Ricky Seals-Jones suffered a neck injury on a Taylor Heinicke shotgun incompletion on a broken play as Seals-Jones crashed into multiple people, including a cameraman to the right of the end zone, and Seals-Jones got stretchered off the field. The cameraman was hurt too, although it turns out he ended up being just fine, actually returned to work, returned to shooting the game. Seals-Jones, though, stretchered off the field. I mean, you see that, man, you don't know what to think. But this was Ron Rivera during his post-game press conference on Sunday with good news on Ricky Seals-Jones.
Yeah, Ricky, for the most part, you know, it is, I don't want to underscore it, but he's fine. He's stable. You know, I shouldn't even use the word stable. He's fine. They checked him. Some of the stuff they did was out of an abundance of caution just to make sure. And they're going to continue to keep an eye on him. But for now, he looks to be pretty good.
All right. So very nice to hear that. Ricky Seals-Jones had one reception for 8 yards on 2 targets. His lone catch was a third down reception for a first down. Washington's second offensive drive resulted in Joey Sly's first quarter 31-yard field goal. Third snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke had a 3rd-and-1 8-yard shotgun play action completion to Ricky Seals-Jones. This was despite Heinicke being pressured by edge defender Derek Barnett and getting blasted by linebacker Alex Singleton. As for Washington's receivers, so no Curtis Samuel again. And, you know, on the one hand, we could, like, not even talk about this because it's like, all right, what else are we going to say other than Curtis Samuel has given Washington nothing in his first season with the team? On the other hand, I don't want to just gloss over this. Like, this is a really big deal that Washington has gotten nothing out of Curtis Samuel this season. Curtis Samuel was supposed to be Washington's number 2 receiver this season. Washington this past March signed Curtis Samuel as an unrestricted free agent to a 3-year, $34.5 million contract with $21.5 million fully guaranteed. Curtis Samuel was supposed to open things up for Terry McLaurin. And instead, Curtis Samuel on Sunday was inactive for a 3rd consecutive game due to a hamstring injury. He now has not played in 11 of Washington's 16 games in the 2021 regular season. Samuel did not play in weeks 1 through 3 and then did not play in weeks 6 through 11, a 5-game stretch, due to his nagging groin injury. He now has missed 3 consecutive games with this hamstring injury. Curtis Samuel in the 2021 regular season has played in just 5 games. He has 6 receptions for 27 yards on 9 targets and 4 carries for 11 yards. He has totaled 84 offensive snaps the entire season. Look, I know it's not Curtis Samuel's fault that he's dealt with this groin injury and now this hamstring injury, but it doesn't matter whose fault it is. His first season with Washington has been an abject failure, okay? As in, he has provided next to nothing, okay? He has barely played this season. And this hamstring injury, which felt like it came out of nowhere and felt like, okay, maybe a 1-week thing, it's now a 3-week thing. He's played in 5 of Washington's 16 games this regular season. We on Sunday, though, did get more of a concerted effort by Washington to get Terry McLaurin touches. I did like seeing that, and I do want to applaud Scott Turner for doing that, for putting forth more of a concerted effort to get Terry his touches. Now, you know, you could say, well, geez, it was about time, okay? Terry McLaurin, over his previous five games, just 12 receptions for 164 yards and no touchdowns on 25 targets. But Washington in this game very clearly made it a point to get Terry McLaurin more touches. And you know what? When you do that, you know what happens? The guy gets more touches. Terry McLaurin, in this loss to the Eagles at FedEx Field on Sunday afternoon, 7 receptions for 61 yards on 8 targets, and he drew a penalty. Washington's second offensive drive resulted in Joey Sly's first quarter 31-yard field goal. The fifth snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a first and 10, 12-yard shotgun completion to Terry McLaurin, who gave a great stiff arm to get by linebacker Alex Singleton for the yak for a first down. Washington's third offensive drive resulted in Joey Sly's second quarter 39-yard field goal. The first snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a first and 10, 12-yard pistol play action completion to Terry McLaurin on a receiver screen. A great way to get your number one receiver a touch. We also had the penalty. Washington's seventh offensive drive did result in a fourth quarter turnover on downs, but the fourth snap of the drive, Terry McLaurin drew a first and 10, 12-yard pass interference penalty on corner Avante Maddox. Just throwing the football at Terry McLaurin can result in good things, even if McLaurin doesn't make the reception. So good to see this. I mean, look, these were not dynamic numbers for Terry, all right? 7 receptions for 61 yards on 8 targets. There's still a lot more that needs to be done here, but that line is a lot better than what we had been seeing over the previous 5 games. Cam Sims, 4 receptions for 48 yards on 5 targets. Cam had a nice catch on Washington's game-opening drive. That first offensive drive of the game resulted in the Jarrett Patterson first quarter, first and 10, 11-yard under-center handoff, touchdown run, third snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a third and 4, 16-yard shotgun completion to Cam Sims, who made a nice leaping and spinning catch. And De'Ami Brown, for a second consecutive game, had a deep catch. I mean, it's only one, but it's better than none. De'Ami Brown on Sunday, 1 reception for 25 yards on 1 target. Washington's second offensive drive resulted in the Joey Sly first quarter 31-yard field goal. The fourth snap of the drive, Taylor Heinicke, a first and 10, 25-yard under center play action completion to De'Ami Brown. So was good to see that. While we're talking receivers, did you see that Washington on Saturday afternoon released Antonio Gandy-Golden? Antonio Gandy-Golden. He was sort of like last year's De'Ami Brown, and now AGG is gone. We'll see if that lasts. It's always possible that Washington brings him back in some capacity, but Antonio Gandy-Golden had been inactive for each of Washington's previous 7 games. Washington, on October 23rd, announced the signing of Antonio Gandy-Golden from the practice squad to the active roster. He had been elevated from the practice squad to the active roster for each of the previous 2 games. Washington, though, remember, released Antonio Gandy-Golden in the cut down to 53 for this season. This past August 31st, did, though, then sign him to the practice squad on September 1st. But when it came to Washington releasing Antonio Gandy-Golden this past Saturday afternoon, you know, people made a big deal out of it, and I understand why, but remember, Washington already had released Antonio Gandy-Golden, did so in the cutdown to 53 on August 31st. But Antonio Gandy-Golden has been a disappointment. Washington took him in the 4th round of the 2020 NFL draft out of Liberty, and this was a well-regarded draft selection. ESPN NFL front office insider Louis Riddick on the ESPN ABC telecast of day 3 of the 2020 NFL draft called Washington taking Antonio Gandy-Golden a, quote, spectacular pick by the Redskins, end quote. NFL draft analyst Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network and NFL.com labeled Washington's selection of Antonio Gandy-Golden as the best value pick in the 4th round of the 2020 NFL draft. So this isn't just like a Washington fans thing where, you know, we as fans and observers overhyped Antonio Gandy-Golden. No, the national NFL media hyped Antonio Gandy-Golden, and it turns out overhyped Antonio Gandy-Golden. He had a lost 2020 rookie season, played in just 6 games, totaled just 1 reception on 3 targets. Antonio Gandy-Golden was on Washington's reserve injured list from October 24th 2020 to December 26th, 2020, due to a hamstring injury that was suffered in the 2019 loss at the New York Giants in week six of the 2020 season. And now Antonio Gandy-Golden is gone, at least for now. Like I said, it's always possible that he's brought back. But here's the bottom line. Washington, for 40-plus years, has had a really hard time drafting receivers who end up being good for Washington. The majority of Washington's best receivers over the last 40 years have been guys who were acquired in ways other than the NFL draft. And when we talk about Terry McLaurin, and you hear me say that he is the best drafted receiver for Washington in terms of a guy who was taken by Washington since Art Monk, that's not exaggeration. That's not hyperbole. That's truth. And the reason that's truth is that there have been so few receivers who Washington has taken in NFL drafts who have ended up doing really well for Washington. Washington took Art Monk in the first round of the 1980 NFL draft. Go through draft by draft receivers who Washington has selected since taking the great Art Monk in the first round of the 1980 NFL draft. It is one flop after another. It is one underwhelming receiver after another. And the truth is, Terry McLaurin is the best of the bunch, okay? And Terry is a really good receiver, but there isn't that much competition, you know? Terry McLaurin, third round, 2019 NFL draft. Jamison Crowder, fourth round, 2015 NFL draft. There aren't many more beyond those two. I mean, again, look it up. The majority of the good receivers for Washington over the last 40 years have been acquired via trade or free agency or something like, say, the USFL dispersal draft. You know, that's how Washington got itself Gary Clark and ultimately Ricky Sanders. But yeah, Antonio Gandy-Golden, another receiver taken by Washington in an NFL draft with some hype, who, at least so far, you have to say, has not worked out. Two other items from Washington's loss to the Eagles at FedEx Field. So, no Tress Way in this game. Tress Way did not play in this game due to being on the reserve COVID-19 list. Washington, on Thursday, placed Way on the reserve COVID-19 list. And Washington, on Friday, signed Ryan Winslow to the practice squad, and Washington on Saturday afternoon elevated Ryan Winslow from the practice squad to the active roster. So Ryan Winslow was Washington's punter on Sunday. He punted just twice in the game. He became the first player other than Tress Way to punt for Washington in a regular season game since Sav Rocca in week 17 of the 2013 season. Ryan Winslow had a third quarter 38-yard punt that was fair caught at the Eagles 42, and Ryan Winslow had a third quarter 46-yard punt to the Eagles 36 that was returned for 70 yards by receiver Jalen Reagor. But I do want to say this, and I tweeted this on Friday, a salute to Tress Way. The guy had been Washington's punter in every game since the start of the 2014 season, and he has been an elite player at his position. That's not overstating things. Tress Way has legitimately been one of the best punters in the NFL since his time with Washington began. And, you know, Tress Way being an elite player at his position, this has come during a time in which Washington has had few, if any, elite players. We talk about, like, who are the A players on Washington? Who are the B players on Washington? Tress Way at his position is an A player. Every year, he's among the top guys in the NFL in both yards per punt and net yards per punt. And, you know, it's easy to overlook this, right? Because I know he's a punter, okay? But still, at his position, he has excelled. He has been elite. And I don't think we talk about this enough. Tress Way is an outstanding punter. And the fact that his Iron Man streak came to an end due to him being on the reserve COVID-19 list is unfortunate, but it doesn't take away from the fact that Tress Way has been an excellent punter for Washington. Also, DeAndre Carter on Sunday, no punt returns, but he returned the game's opening kickoff for 34 yards. He also had a 23-yard kickoff return in the fourth quarter. DeAndre Carter has been really good this season on kickoff returns for Washington. All right, let's get to some non-Washington football team items on this Monday installment of the Al Galdi podcast. Perhaps some happier items on this Monday installment of the Al Galdi podcast. So two games for the Capitals over the weekend. Friday night, New Year's Eve, a 3-1 win at the Detroit Red Wings. Sunday, a 4-3 overtime loss to the New Jersey Devils at Capital One Arena. The Caps now are just 2-7 this season in games decided in overtime or shootout, but the Caps also this season now are 26-8 overall. The Caps have an NHL best 48 points. Yes, the Caps are atop the entire NHL, and that really is amazing considering how the Caps throughout this season have been bludgeoned by injuries and COVID-19 protocols and now some non-COVID-19 illnesses. More on all of that coming up in just a bit. But we cannot talk Caps for long without making mention of this. Alex Ovechkin, over the weekend, made history. The Great Eight did it again. Made history. Ovechkin in the 3-1 win at the Red Wings on Friday night made history and actually had just another great game. Alex Ovechkin scored a power play goal 17:09 into the third period. The goal came right at the end of a Caps power play. There was actually some confusion regarding, okay, was that a power play goal or wasn't it? Well, it was a power play goal, and it was Ovechkin's 275th career regular season power play goal, moving him past Dave Andrechuk for the most regular season power play goals in NHL history. Also, Ovechkin's power play goal proved to be the game-winning goal, making it Ovechkin's 119th career regular season game-winning goal. That moved him past Phil Esposito for the third most career regular season game-winning goals in NHL history. Only Jaromir Jagr and Gordie Howe have more. Ovechkin, 119 career regular season game-winning goals. Jagr is the all-time number one with 135. Gordie Howe, number two, at 121. Alex Ovechkin on Friday night also had a third period even strength empty net goal. So he finished the game with two goals, a game high 7 shots on goal, and a game high 10 shot attempts. This game, Alex Ovechkin's 154th career regular season multi-goal game, tying him with Mario Lemieux for the third most regular season multi-goal games in NHL history. There's not much left that can be said about Alex Ovechkin. He is an all-time great. He is on the short list of the greatest players in NHL history. He is among the greatest athletes in Washington, D.C. sports history. I mean, to me, the conversation is Alex Ovechkin, Sammy Ball, and Walter Johnson. Okay, take your pick out of those three guys. And obviously, in the cases of Ball and Johnson, they played a long time ago when sports were very different. In terms of modern times, ain't nobody been better in Washington, D.C. sports than Alex Ovechkin. Great to see him get this mark of being the NHL's all-time leader in regular season power play goals. You knew that this was coming, okay? I mean, Ovechkin's been climbing that list for the longest time here, but awesome to see Ovi get that. And, you know, so fitting that he does it in A, a Caps win, and B, on New Year's Eve. I don't know. There was just something very fitting about that, that the calendar year ends with Ovechkin getting this record, having this multi-goal game. Ovechkin in the 4-3 overtime loss to the Devils at Capital One Arena on Sunday. No points. Did have a plus-minus rating of -2 as well, but he also had a game-high 11 shot attempts and also had 4 hits. Big game for Evgeny Kuznetsov on Friday night, too, that 3-1 win at the Red Wings. Kuzi, a second-period even-strength goal and the primary assist on the Alex Ovechkin third-period power play goal. But yeah, the Caps have been missing a lot of key guys here lately. You say to yourself, like, where would the Caps be this season if not for Alex Ovechkin having this Hart Trophy-worthy campaign, this MVP-worthy campaign? It's been maddening if you're a Caps fan trying to keep track of who is in and who is out game in and game out. So just for this 4-3 overtime loss to the Devils at Capital One Arena on Sunday. Center Nicklas Backstrom did not play due to a non-COVID-19 illness. Forward TJ Oshie did not play due to a non-COVID-19 illness. Defenseman Martin Fehervaari did not play for a third consecutive game due to being in the NHL's COVID-19 protocol. Goaltender Vitek Vanacek remains in the NHL's COVID-19 protocol. Caps also continue to be without forward Anthony Mantha. He is out indefinitely due to shoulder surgery that he underwent on November 5th. Now, the Caps on Sunday did at least get some guys back, so that was good news. Center Lars Eller returned from a one-game absence caused by a non-COVID-19 illness. Defenseman Justin Schultz returned from a two-game absence caused by being in the NHL's COVID-19 protocol. Defenseman Nick Jensen returned from a two-game absence caused by being in the NHL's COVID-19 protocol. And forward Daniel Sprong was back from, yes, being in the NHL's COVID-19 protocol. So, you know, at least you're getting some people back. But again, every game, you're like, okay, who's out for this game? You know, it's just, it drives you nuts if you're a Caps fan trying to track all this stuff. But like I said, the Caps are atop the NHL standings. I mean, hard to complain about that. The Caps are the number one team in the NHL this season. Now, you had this game on Sunday, this 4-3 overtime loss to the Devils at Capital One Arena. The Caps had to rally to get the point. Caps on Sunday overcame a 3-1 third period deficit, got third period even strength goals from Nick Dowd and Connor Sheary. Now, the Caps were down 3-1 in the third period. Caps got outplayed over the first two periods. Caps over the first two periods per natural stat trick had just 2 5-on-5 high danger shot attempts to the Devils' 9. The Caps over the first two periods had 18 shots on goal to the Devils' 24. But the Caps did rally. Caps do get the point. Ilya Samsonov has been the Caps' starting goaltender lately, with Vitek Vanacek in the NHL's COVID-19 protocol. Samsonov was really good on Friday night, not as good on Sunday. Samsonov in the 3-1 win at the Red Wings on Friday night faces 20 shots on goal, made 19 saves. He per natural stat trick stopped 6 of the 7 high danger shots on goal that he faced. Samsonov in the 4-3 overtime loss to the Devils at Capital One Arena on Sunday stopped just 33 of the 37 shots on goal that he faced. He, per natural stat trick, gave up 2 goals on high danger shots on goal, a goal on a medium danger shot on goal, and a goal on a low danger shot on goal. And so now the Caps don't have a game until Friday. Their game at the Montreal Canadiens for Tuesday night got postponed due to, yes, COVID-19 concerns for the Canadiens. As you likely know, Canada has very strict COVID rules. So the Caps' next game, not until this Friday night at the St. Louis Blues at 8. All right, let's talk some Wizards. They will play on Monday night. The Wizards will host the Charlotte Hornets Monday night at 7, and the Wizards will do so off a painful loss on Saturday night. The new year did not get off to a great start for the Wizards. They fell to 18-18 with a 120-119 loss to the Chicago Bulls at Capital One Arena on Saturday night. The Wizards blew a 10-point fourth-quarter lead. The Wizards led in the fourth quarter 102-92, but then lost the rest of the game 28-17. Now, a few things have to be understood about this game. Number one, the Bulls are rolling right now. This win was the Bulls' 7th consecutive win. This win improved the Bulls to an Eastern Conference best at 24-10 this season. Number two, the Wizards for this game had 7 players in the NBA's health and safety protocols and were without another key player. The Wizards were without Spencer Dinwiddie for a 2nd consecutive game due to him being in the NBA's health and safety protocols. The Wizards were without Montrezl Harrell for a 3rd consecutive game due to him being in the NBA's health and safety protocols. The Wizards were without Davis Bertans for a 2nd consecutive game due to a non-COVID-19 related illness. The Wizards were without Raul Neto for a 4th consecutive game due to him being in the NBA's health and safety protocols. The Wizards were without Aaron Holiday for a 3rd consecutive game due to him being in the NBA's health and safety protocols. The Wizards were without Brad Wanamaker due to him being in the NBA's health and safety protocols. Also, both Rui Hachimura and Thomas Bryant remain in the NBA's health and safety protocols. Rui supposedly will make his season debut once he's cleared. He has yet to play this season due to personal reasons. Bryant has yet to play this season as he recovers from a partially torn left ACL that was suffered last January 9th. So all of these players were out for the Wizards, but the story of this loss for the Wizards to the Bulls at Capital One Arena on Saturday night, in many ways, was three-point shooting. The Wizards got shredded in the three-point shooting department, including on the final play of the game. The Wizards allowed DeMar DeRozan to connect on a game-winning, contested left-corner 24-foot three with two defenders on him as time expired in the fourth quarter. I mean, honestly, I'm not sure what else the Wizards could have done. That was just a spectacular make by DeMar DeRozan. That three, by the way, was DeRozan's only three-point attempt the entire game. But the three marked a second consecutive night on which DeRozan connected on a game-winning three in a road win for the Bulls. I told you, the Bulls are rolling right now. DeMar DeRozan nailed a game-winning 27-foot pull-up three as time expired in the fourth quarter of a 108-106 Bulls win at the Indiana Pacers on Friday night. On New Year's Eve, DeMar DeRozan, in fact, became the first player in NBA history to hit a game-winning buzzer beater on back-to-back days. That had never happened before. DeRozan finished his win at the Wizards with 28 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 assists versus 4 turnovers. Although the Wizards did hold DeRozan to just 9 of 21 on twos, and he went to 7 of 10 on free throws. But it wasn't just the DeMar DeRozan game-winning three in terms of threes. The Wizards allowed the Bulls overall to go 17 of 34 on threes. Yes, 17 of 34, 50%. Now look, the Bulls are an elite three-point shooting team. Bulls through games on Saturday were number one in the NBA this season in three-point shooting at 38.6%. But still, the Wizards got demolished on threes in this game. The Wizards allowed Zach LaVine to go 7 of 12 on threes. He finished with 35 points. The Wizards allowed Coby White to go 4 of 8 on threes. Here was head coach Wes Unseld Jr. during his post-game press conference on Saturday night on what went wrong for the Wizards' three-point defense.
Oh, man, a lot of tough shots, in my opinion. I don't think the vast majority were schematically. Some were in transition. And then their guys made tough pull-ups, which they do. I mean, that's part of LaVine's game. That's part of Coby White's game. So we just have to be aware of that. And, you know, Vooch picking and popping. We talked about all those things. So it's just being more in tune and have a little bit more urgency to get to those guys.
Yeah, and making things worse was how bad the Wizards were on threes. The Wizards on Saturday night went just 6 of 27 on threes. So the Bulls went 17 of 34 on threes. The Wizards went 6 of 27 on threes. Bradley Beal went 0 of 4 on threes. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope went just 3 of 10 on threes. Denny Avdia went 0 of 4 on threes. Corey Kispert, who's supposed to be a three-point specialist, 0 of 2 on threes. The Wizards lost this game despite outscoring the Bulls in the paint 72-30. I mean, that is a jarring advantage in paint points, right? 72-30. The Wizards went 36 of 51 on shots in the paint. It goes to show you how much more valuable the three is than any other shot. The Wizards outscored the Bulls in the paint by 42 points, but because the Wizards got killed on threes, the Wizards lost the game. What's funny, though, is this. If not for DeMar DeRozan's game-winning three, Kyle Kuzma would have been the hero of the game. Kuzma connected on a huge three, a go-ahead contested 29-foot right wing three for a 119-117 Wizards lead with 3.3 seconds left in the fourth quarter. He is known as a Clutch Kuz, and he has hit some big shots this season. Kyle Kuzma in the fourth quarter on Saturday night had 13 points and 4 rebounds. He finished the game 2 of 5 on threes, 10 of 13 on twos, and with 29 points, 12 rebounds, 3 assists versus 3 turnovers and 2 steals in 39 minutes, 38 seconds as a starter. Also, Bradley Beal, I mentioned him going 0 of 4 on threes, and he did. And look, Bradley Beal at this point just is not a good 3-point shooter. I'm not sure why, because he wasn't always like this. For a while in his career, he was actually a really good 3-point shooter, but the last few seasons, he's been a bad 3-point shooter. I know some people will say, well, that has to do with the decline of John Wall. Maybe. But Bradley Beal is not a good 3-point shooter. Okay, but also for Beal on Saturday night, he went 8 of 16 on twos. He went 11 of 13 on free throws. He scored 27 points in 42 minutes, 42 seconds as a starter. And how about this? Bradley Beal on Saturday night had a stunning 17 assists versus 2 turnovers. Yeah, 17 assists versus 2 turnovers. Bradley Beal played point guard for the Wizards on Saturday night because every other Wizards point guard was out due to the NBA's health and safety protocol. Spencer Dinwiddie out. Joel Neto out. Aaron Holiday out. Brad Wanamaker out. And so Bradley Beal was the Wizards point guard on Saturday night, and the guy had 17 assists versus 2 turnovers. He also had 4 steals. So, I mean, overall, to me, this was a really good game for Bradley Beal. Here was Wes Unseld Jr. during his post-game press conference on Saturday night on Beal playing the point and having, again, 17 assists versus 2 turnovers.
I think it's a natural fit. You know, he's, you know, been known as a scorer, and he's capable of doing that. But he's also going to make the right read. You know, we put the ball in his hands quite a bit. Even, you know, if he's not orchestrating the offense from the onset, the ball is usually coming to him. So, you know, he's going to make the right read. He's going to see what's open. He's going to, you know, he's unselfish. So I give him credit, you know, to stay with it, to trust guys, to get off of it in a timely manner, set guys up. It generates a lot of offense for everyone.
Yeah, also worth mentioning Daniel Gafford. He on Saturday night in just 20 minutes, 15 seconds as a starter had 19 points, went 9-10 from the field, all twos, had 8 rebounds, including 4 offensive boards and 2 blocks. But the Wizards did lose. The Wizards suffered a tough loss, and the Wizards now are just 8-15 since their 10-3 start to the season. And let's talk some college basketball before we call it a show. Big game for Maryland on Monday night. The Terrapins will be at Iowa at 9. This will be the Terps' second Big Ten game. Their first was their first game with Danny Manning as interim head coach. That 67-61 loss to Northwestern at Xfinity Center in College Park on December 5th. In terms of games over the weekend, nice win for Virginia. The Cavaliers improved to 8-5 overall and 2-1 in the ACC, a 74-69 win at Syracuse on Saturday evening. Now, this was far from a perfect game for Wahoo. The Cavs did blow a 12-point first-half lead. The Cavs got scorched by Buddy Boeheim, a son of Syracuse head coach Jim Boeheim. Buddy Boeheim in this game went 5 of 11 on threes, finished with 27 points. The Cavs had just 9 offensive rebounds to Syracuse's 18, and the Cavs had some problems defending without fouling. Syracuse had 23 free throw attempts to the Cavs' 10, but Syracuse went just 15 of 23 on free throws. Jimmy Boeheim, another son of Syracuse head coach Jim Boeheim, went just 2 of 8 on free throws, and the Wahoos won. And the Hoos won in large part due to their offense, an offense that has not been great so far this season, but the Hoos ended up doing a nice job against that Syracuse zone defense. The Hoos went 7-20 on threes. The Hoos went 23 of 37 on twos, outscored Syracuse in the paint 40-24. Also, while UVA did allow Buddy Boeheim to go 5 of 11 on threes, UVA held all other Syracuse players to just 5 of 19 on threes, and UVA held Syracuse overall to just 12 of 30 on twos. Really good game for Virginia's senior point guard, the 5'10" Kihei Clark. And I would be surprised if old Kihei really is 5'10". He looks smaller than that. But Kihei Clark did a good job on Saturday evening. 3 of 5 on threes, 3 of 4 on twos. He finished with 17 points, 8 assists versus 4 turnovers and 4 rebounds in 38 minutes, 34 seconds as a starter. Very efficient game for the East Carolina transfer, Jaden Gardner. He did deal with some foul trouble, only played for 21 minutes, 37 seconds as a starter, but he in that time had 15 points on 7 of 13 shooting, all twos, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists versus 1 turnover. Virginia got big production from 6'11 big man Caden Shedrick. He had 12 points on 5 of 8 shooting, all twos, 11 rebounds, including 4 offensive boards and 2 steals in exactly 31 minutes as a starter. And Indiana transfer Armon Franklin, 3 of 9 on threes, 4 of 6 on twos. He finished with 17 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists versus 2 turnovers and 2 steals in 34-46 as a starter. You know, Virginia has not looked great throughout this season. Heck, the Cavs' last game had been a 17-point loss, a 67-50 loss to Clemson at John Paul Jones Arena in Charlottesville on December 22nd. But UVA got this win at Syracuse on Saturday evening. And next up for the Hoos, a game at Clemson Tuesday night at 9. How about George Mason over the weekend? The Mason Nation flirted with pulling off a shocker. The Patriots lost at number 6 Kansas 76-67 on Saturday night. Mason was within 5 points with less than 4 minutes left in the second half. Ultimately did not come through. Still though, this was an impressive effort. George Mason had just 9 players dressed for this game due to COVID-19 health and safety protocols. Mason went 11 of 27 on threes, helped Kansas to 9 of 28 on threes. Mason did get outscored in the paint 32-18, did get outscored in points off turnovers 19-3. And then some good news for Georgetown over the weekend. So the Hoyas, due to COVID-19 issues, have not played a game since an 80-73 loss to TCU at Capital One Arena on December 18th. Yeah, Georgetown has not played a game since a week before Christmas. The Big East for a while was just canceling games as opposed to rescheduling games, but the conference now, thankfully, is rescheduling games. Sanity prevailed, and so the Big East on Saturday morning announced the rescheduling of two Georgetown games that were not played on their original dates due to COVID-19 issues. Georgetown at Providence, which was supposed to have happened on December 22nd, was rescheduled for January 20th, and Georgetown at Creighton, which was supposed to have happened on December 28th, rescheduled for February 14th. The Hoyas' next game is scheduled to be a home game against Marquette this Friday evening at 6:30. All right, that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can tweet me at Al Galdi. You can email me, the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Tuesday show, episode 221, will feature much more on our Washington football team, often falling to 6-10 and being eliminated from playoff contention with a 2016 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles at FedEx Field on Sunday afternoon. We will have Ron Rivera's day after the game Zoom press conference on Monday afternoon to go through. Also on Tuesday show, all postgame games for the Wizards and Maryland basketball. On Monday night, the Wizards will host the Charlotte Hornets Monday night at 7. The Terrapins will be at Iowa Monday night at 9. Have a great rest of your Monday, and I'll talk to you on Tuesday.
First off, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.